Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 5, and the Steelers played their second preseason game last night at Heinz Field, and they were 17-0 losers to the Philadelphia Eagles. Obviously, no points on the board. The offense gave up a pick six, so the defense really was only responsible for 10 of the points that were scored. Dave, here we go. Two preseason games in the books, and I guess the most important thing is to recognize, A, that offensively Ben, A.B., Le'Veon Bell, and D'Angelo Williams didn't play. The team came out of the game relatively healthy, and there are a couple bright spots. We can talk about the defense and maybe a couple individual plays on offense, but it wasn't a very scintillating performance. In fact, it was pretty ugly all around, particularly on the offensive side of things.
First of all, Dave, you sound mighty spry for a Friday morning after doing a show into the wee hours of the morning. Congratulations there. And second, they don't have any bridges in Las Vegas, so I did not have to jump off of any of them, nor did really I have the inclination to after going back through the tape. This was obviously not... not a great performance by the Steelers offense, whichever group that you want to point to. Defensively, I thought the defensive starters played reasonably well, to be quite honest with you. And I think the depth pass there was questionable, as you would probably expect. But that's what it is. They continue to fail to make plays. How did Mike Tomlin categorize it after the Lions game? Making key plays or necessary plays when they needed to, and that's what it came down to. And I'm sure we're going to talk quite a bit early on here about the Landry Jones 4 interceptions. But I think, David, I know Steeler fans, a lot of them have problems doing this, and I know you probably got a lot of this on Twitter just as I did. It wasn't a great performance by Landry Jones. Nobody is going to try to sell anybody that Landry Jones had a great performance Thursday night. But a few of those interceptions, I think you can question the blame on.
Yeah, and then that's a good place to start with Landry Jones. And first, let's get the injury report out of the way. It was a short one. Obviously, a ton of guys didn't play in this game, aside from the guys I mentioned. You had guys like Marcus Wheaton didn't play. You had on the defensive side, Artie Burns, Bud Dupree, Jarvis Jones. The list kind of goes on. Marcus Gilbert didn't play on the offensive side of things. So there were a ton of guys who didn't play in this game. But in terms of the injury situation, Dave, just Cody Wallace. Sounds like a hyperextended knee is how Mike described it. That's the type of thing that will probably keep him out this week and out of the Saints game, but it doesn't sound like anything serious or long-term. So, again, looking for silver linings, for small things to feel good about. The Steelers have come out of these games without, too many serious injuries.
David, let me ask you this. In regard to Marcus Wheaton, what are you kind of hearing with him? Because quite honestly, this is kind of – look, I understand Ben sitting. I understand A.B. and Bell and D'Angelo Williams sitting. But a guy like Marcus Wheaton, who's obviously banged up to some degree, are you worried that this kind of lingering calf, whatever he's dealing with, lower leg, is a little bit more serious than maybe what we know?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I haven't heard a thing, and that's why at the very early in the game, maybe the Steelers' second series, I tweeted out, I don't see Marcus Wheaton on the field, and I don't see him on the sidelines, and to the best of my knowledge, he was not ruled out of this game. Now, he was on the sidelines with the towel around his neck, but he was never going to play in this game, so he was ruled out before they started. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, you know, Wheaton, I think, needs to get on the field. We'll get into the receivers, but yeah, I was a bit surprised not to see him at all last night.
I mean, he is a guy that, okay, you could understand missing the opener even if he was banged up. But, I mean, if he was remotely, you know, we're talking 95% healthy, you would want to get him some burn in this second preseason game, wouldn't you?
I would have assumed. That's why I asked the question. So, look, I mean, obviously the Steelers are being conservative rather than aggressive in terms of playing time. You know, with Dupree and Jarvis Jones, you would have thought that they could have probably played some snaps. You know, Artie Burns probably could have played some snaps in the game in terms of their level of health and fitness. So I would expect these guys, now that they have a long week rather than a short week, 8 days instead of 6 days going to the game against the Saints, that we will see, kind of after, you know, coming up on the weekend's practices, we will see those guys get some run, and I would expect them to get extensive time in the game Wednesday against the Saints now. And then to follow that up, Dave, just on Mike Tomlin's post-game comments, he did say we got to see guys in the stadium with the lights on when asked about kind of the core group of offensive stars who haven't played so far. So there's some, I think, justifiable speculation whether any of these guys would play at all in the preseason. You know, Adrian Peterson hasn't played in the preseason for the Vikings since 2011. So certainly there's precedent for teams doing this type of thing. But it sounds like, from what Mike said, I would expect everybody healthy, you know, from Ben on down, to get at least a few reps coming into the Saints game. So I think that means a series or two for Ben, maybe a quarter for some other guys. It means maybe one carry or two carries for Le'Veon Bell. He would be the one guy, I would say, if I were going to bet on one guy not playing at all, Bell would be that guy. But I do expect to see kind of all these guys, including Ben and AB, coming up on Friday.
Yeah, I'd like to see them get a half, to be quite honest with you, but we'll see. I mean, look, they're not going to go the whole preseason without playing a large group of these guys that they've been resting in, and they need to get this starting offensive unit some work and some confidence and everything that goes along with that. And hopefully Marcus Wheaton's one of them, you know, and if he does not suit up for the Saints game, well, then a guy like Eli Rogers, perhaps maybe there is a chance that a guy like Eli Rogers can play 20 snaps a game, as you suggested a show or two ago there. But definitely I'm a tad bit concerned about Marcus Wheaton right now, and hopefully those fears are kind of put in their place against the Saints.
Okay, so let's talk about Landry Jones. And you know, if you look at the raw numbers, I think Jones finished, 12 of 20, if I remember correctly. Obviously had four interceptions, and all this is all in a half of play. So, you know, that's the significant data to take out of that. He had two long drives after the first pick six. So let's talk about the interceptions as they happened, Dave. The first one, to me, I felt like it was 100% on Landry Jones. I felt like he stared down Sammy Coates the whole way. I just, you know, he looked at him the whole way, and whether I don't know if it was a corner or a safety got the jump on it. He got such a good jump on it that he drove through, caught the ball, and Sammy Coates got it pretty much to high, you know, to full speed pretty quickly, coming back after him, and couldn't track him down, and Jones didn't track him down to the corner of the end zone or the pylon either, and so he takes it back for a touchdown. To me, you know, if I'm assessing blame, that's pretty much kind of 90-95% on Landry.
Yes, indeed. Now, could Coates have done a better job of working back to the football coming out of his break? I think so, but I think this is the worst of the four interceptions that Jones had. Ill-advised decision, ill-advised, you know, throw, kind of a little bit behind, if you will. I think he was obviously thinking Coates was going to run that curl and come back to the mark where he did put the football, but yeah, that was the worst of the four. in my opinion, unfortunately, it was return for a touchdown. And I have all four of these for those listening already up on the site and broken down, not in great detail, but generally broken down. Then Alex Cazora will have the first one that David and I just discussed broken down on the site later today. Really kind of a Hank concept that the Steelers like to run. If memory serves me, and you'll see how Landry kind of goes through his progressions or lack thereof, I believe, in Alex's post as well, too. So worst of the four, if you ask me.
Yeah, okay. I'm with you on that, on worst of the four. Okay, the second one, Steelers driving in the first quarter, and they move the ball well, and they get down into deep into Eagles territory, and their lineup trips right. And Dave, I'm doing this off memory, so correct me if I do it wrong, but I think sequentially from inside to out, it was Sammy Coates, it was Darius Heyward-Bey, and it was Kobe Hamilton. And what happened is both the two inside receivers, Coates and Heyward-Bey, run square outs. They go down about 5 yards, and I think on the play, David, was it third and five, maybe something like that, but they had about 4 or 5 yards to get to the sticks, because I remember thinking, watching it, as the two guys run their square outs and Heyward-Bey is closer to the sideline, he's the one, as the Eagles are trying to sort it out. Now Hamilton runs a go pattern toward the back pylon. As the Eagles are trying to sort it out, when Heyward-Bey makes his cut, he's open immediately for a short throw for a first down. Now, obviously, that's not the choice Landry Jones makes. He throws it into the back of the end zone, and the Eagles DB and Hamilton go up for it. If anything, maybe it was a tad underthrown, but it's, you know, it's kind of a jump ball with Hamilton having a much better look at it than the Eagles DB. It's not necessarily all that different than the catch Heyward-Bey made the week before, where Cresdon Butler was actually in good position and just, you know, had his hands and between the ball and the arms of Heyward-Bey. This time the ball gets deflected up in the air, and the Eagles safety's there to kind of clean up the mess and makes a nice play on the ball. I don't really put a lot of fault in this. This is unfortunate in terms of how the ball bounced. I guess you could question the decision-making if you wanted to go for the first down, but this, to me, Dave, was kind of a non-event.
Yeah, it looked kind of worse when it happened. But if you look on the site, I slowed the replay of this thing down and zoomed in on where the pass hit, David, and it goes over the head of the defensive back in coverage, and it actually looks like it hits Kobe Hamilton just above the numbers, right in the the breastplate of the shoulder pad, and then bounces off. If Kobe Hamilton makes this catch, David, what's the narrative?
Well, the narrative is that Kobe Hamilton's in the conversation to, you know, for the practice squad and maybe making the team if they keep six receivers, and Landry Jones is good at throwing that deep ball into the corner of the end zone.
Yeah, it's considered a throw in the bucket by Jones, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, it hit the receiver. I invite everybody to go look at this. Was it tight coverage? Yes. Was it a catchable ball? Yes. It bounced off. It was picked off deflection. Just unfortunate all the way around. And as Mike Tomlin said after the game, sometimes you got to acknowledge that the opponent makes a quality play or two. And I think this is one of those situations here. So could he have gone to Darius Heyward-Bey out to the right flat? Possibly. Was this, like I said, if Kobe Hamilton makes this catch we're talking about right now, man, what a great throw by Landry Jones dropping that in the bucket. Could it have been maybe a tad bit deeper? Maybe, for sure. But I'm not losing sleep over this one, David.
Yeah, not losing sleep over this one either. Maybe the most difficult to assess was the third interception, and this is a pass, again, to Sammy Coates, and it's in the same corner of the end zone as the Kobe Hamilton one, but at the other end, so he's throwing to his open side, his right side, and he's throwing to Coates in the back corner. Now, I'll tell you, and you can hear this on my show, if you heard the sound after the game, Sammy Coates was interviewed again, and I kind of lauded Coates for how he handled himself after the first game with the two fumbles where he took full responsibility. And after this game, he must have said 20 times, we got to make plays for our quarterback. You know, I got to do a better job. Again, he was very kind of I don't want to use the word apologetic, but he took responsibility for the plays, said it was on him, did not for one second criticize Landry's play, said he had to do better, which was interesting because when Landry Jones was asked about things after the game, and this is from a handout from the Steelers, as he said he was asked specifically, on the first one especially, did you stare down Sammy too much? And he said, I don't think so. I felt like my rhythm was normal on what to do on a corner curl. And then he was asked, do you think Sammy is ready to take over a primary role in certain people's absence? And he said, yep, he's just got to step up and make some plays. I'm sure he'd like to have some plays back tonight. I'd like to have some plays back tonight. And kind of went on to expand after that. But he didn't let Sammy Coates off the hook here, Dave. So what did you see in the route that Coates ran?
Well, once again, this is one I'm not going to lose sleep over. This was supposed to be a post corner by Coates. I mean, this was going to probably go to him right off the snap. First read all the way around. He really doesn't do a good job, in my opinion, of selling that inside post and really kind of coming out of that break, David, on the corner part. He kind of lets up a little bit. And I've got the gif of this up on Steelers Depot. And, boy, that defensive back, Aaron Grimes, ran the route better than Sammy Coates did. Jones' job is to put that football in a certain spot on the back of the in the corner of the end zone there, and he did. And the defensive back, you know, read Coates route and ran it for him and made a tremendous catch on the play. So yeah, I mean, I don't think this is a great route. If this is Antonio Brown, I bet he twists Grimes into the ground like a corkscrew. and this is six, but very unimpressed with Coates' effort on this route.
I'm with you, and I haven't watched the replay as much as you have, but there's some question. Again, questioning effort is the worst thing you can do when we sit in these seats because it's hard to know exactly what's going on at what time. But it just didn't look like Sammy. It looked, I don't know if I want to say he gave up on the route early, but it just didn't look like he ran it the way he was supposed to run it. And with you.
Check your DMs right now. I just sent you a GIF of that, David.
Yeah. So you know, the way I look at it is, I'm totally with what you said in terms of Landry Jones is throwing that ball to a spot. And, you know, the corner did a great job of playing it and cutting off the angle. And that's where the fight has to come from Sammy Coates. He's got to know that I don't know if he gets bumped off it there just a little bit at the end. But, again, this is really good coverage. And I will, you know, I'll give the DB a ton of credit on how he plays this. He gets turned around, but he turns around and he covers and he gets to the outside. And in getting to the outside, he inhibits Coates' route just a tad. So, yeah, this is a great video on Steelers Depot to see just clearly how it goes. And, you know, Coach has got to go up and, you know, as you said, Dave, the DB made a really good play catching the ball. Coach has got to go up and play like a DB on that and at least get a hand on it. I mean, he goes off his right foot on a ball that's in the back left, you know, in the back right corner of the end zone. It looks like just didn't time it all that well.
Look, David, look at how Sammy rounds off that initial post move. On this play, you've got to stick that foot in the ground and really, really sell that post route. That's what's going to freeze that defensive back there, and cause you to be able to get on the backside of him on the corner side of the route. I mean, it's a simple post corner route. It's just, in my opinion, poor lackadaisically ran by Sammy Coates, and I bet Richard Mann will be all over him in the film room on this one.
Yeah, I'm with you. And let's say this about the throws here. In Landry's performance on the 20 attempts I think he had, Landry didn't throw the ball poorly. None of these were poorly thrown balls. He threw a couple balls down the sideline. One coach got the offensive interference call. One play right at the beginning of the game, Darius Hayward Bay. I think Landry Jones threw the ball reasonably well. Boy, we are going to get crucified in the comments here, kind of defending.
We're going to get crucified is right. We're going to be Landry Jones apologist on this one. And look, anybody that knows me particularly, I'm not a huge Landry Jones fan, but I think you.
No, we were cutting him last year. Getting the, you know.
Right, but I think you still got to do him the favor and look at these objectively, and that's exactly what I'm trying to do, and I know you part of your job of doing as well too. So carry on.
All right, so number four, there's not much to say here. Jesse James early in the game, flat first series of the game, you know, flat miss some blocks in the running game. Here, he's I don't want to say he's out there on an island, but he's playing outside the right tackle, and the Lions are bringing a former first-round pick off the edge, and he just clean beats him. I mean, he just beats him with the speed rush. Jesse James tries to get back in his stance and get there, but he doesn't get there. I mean, there is minimal contact. And, you know, there are situations in this game where we're going to talk later about Dustin Vaughn holding the ball too long. Hard to suggest that Landry held it too long. He's making a throw over the middle, and he gets hit as he throws. And again, you know what? All three of these, the last three interceptions were all good hands catches by the Eagles DBs. These were nice plays. And that ball was kind of floating up there, and the guy went and high pointed it. He didn't have a lot of traffic to go into, but he made a nice play and caught it, and it actually set up the field goal that made it 10-0.
Yes, and I mean, look, he. Who's to say how this play turns out if Landry Jones is not hit on this fourth one, okay? People are going to say he's got to have better pocket presence and his clock's got to be better in this situation, but he's also got to wait till Eli Rogers gets open on this play too. Does he hit Eli Rogers if he has another half second long to get rid of the football? It's hard to tell, David. I mean, it really is. But once again, this was a wounded duck interception as a result of him being hit, and it's hard to judge it past that. You know, any more than just that.
Right, and so there you go. The reality is the Steelers with Landry Jones moved the ball against a better defense this week, the Eagles, than they did last week against the Lions. You know, they got more yardage. He threw for more. Look, it wasn't explosive, but they did some nice things moving the ball. And at the end of the day, okay, so the four turnovers are what sticks out, and the Steelers are down. Was it 10-0 at that point in time?
I'm trying to remember where the second Parkey field goal. Oh, the Parkey field goal came right before the end of the first half, right?
Yeah, it was 10-0. So that's what it was at the half. And Dave, just to move forward and talk a little bit about the offense and what they did in that first half. So I was selling my Eli Rogers last Monday after the game, saying, you know, I think he's going to be a much bigger part of this offense than people think. Are you starting to be with me?
I mean, I think he could get some snaps, but I'm not ready to go 20 snaps a game just yet. You know, like I said earlier, if a guy like Marcus Wheaton's sideline, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I could see him getting some snaps, but I find it hard, David, trying to find a guy like Eli Rogers some snaps in this offense if Antonio Brown, Marcus Wheaton, Sammy Coates, and Darius Hayward Bay are all healthy. I mean, can he pick up four or five? Sure. I think so, especially out of the slot. But remember, he is a slot player and a slot player only. I love the kid. I mean, he's a great route runner. He seems to be very knowledgeable. How nice is it to have a guy that can kind of run that option route from the inside all of the way Hines Ward used to run it? A guy that seems to be fairly reliable hands-wise. Over to short middle, but you know he's obviously going to make the roster as a number five receiver. I'm still not ready to go hop on the back of your wagon though on the 20 snaps a game.
Yeah, I love that little option route that he ran. We see AB run that. He doesn't get the opportunity to run it as much anymore, but he comes out of that and you get man coverage going across the field, and any receiver in the NFL is almost impossible to cover, and he just missed breaking it. I mean, he catches it, and it's kind of a diving tackle to trip him up, but made some good plays, four catches in this one.
Makes you wonder how he went undrafted, right? Because this is everything that his college tape showed. Very, very consistent player, working out of the slot, good route runner. You know, he averaged between, 41 and 46 catches all 4 years at Louisville, right around averaging about 500 receiving yards a game. You know, a possession receiver kind of dude. And it really, looking back on it now, makes you kind of wonder why he went undrafted.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those things because he really is a pure slot receiver. The Steelers actually had one play where they got him out of the slot and got him wide. They motioned him from the slot out wide to the top, to the left of the quarterback. And in that play, they ran a wide receiver screen to him. So that was obviously a design play for him. But you'll see, you watch, anytime he lines up and he's the wide receiver, he's out wide. In terms of the splits when they come out of the huddle, he's going to go in motion and come inside, and he's going to be a slot guy. That's what he is. And so we'll see if that particular skill gets him more playing time. A couple of early drops in this game, Dave. Kobe Hamilton had one across the middle. Xavier Grimble had one across the middle. The Xavier Grimble one is tough because of the Steelers' tight end position. Neither guy helped himself in that situation. Probably hurts Grimble more than Hamilton. And you hate to point to one play and say, you know, this is impactful. But the reality is Xavier Grimble may very well make this roster by default because the Steelers are going to carry three tight ends. And there's a battle just to have two tight ends right now.
Yeah, and it's not looking good for Ladarius Green right now, being ready for the start of the season. So if that indeed is the case, unless you go out and Alex Cazor has been banging the table that this team could possibly be watching the waiver wire for a very Matt Spaeth-like tight end, and we'll have to see if that happens. But if that doesn't happen, then yes, a guy like Grimble, and he's been uneven these first two games, right, David? I mean, and he didn't play a ton of snaps in the opener against the Lions, but he played quite a few more against the Eagles Thursday night, and not a lot to be overly excited about based on what he put on tape Thursday night.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, he hasn't been overly impressive in camp. I mean, he's an athletic guy who can make some plays, but he has not shined from what we've seen so far. So, what's Kobe Hamilton's status? Is he going to the practice squad and he's going to be the guy who ends up there?
You got to like his chances. Now, I spotlighted him as my offensive player to watch last night ahead of the game, and because I expected him to get playing time after a pretty decent showing against the Lions, he ended up playing a game high along with Cody Wallace, 41 snaps. He really had an opportunity to help himself in this game, and it was unfortunately an uneven performance. You know, we already talked about that play in the end zone. If he comes down with that catch, we might be talking, Kobe's a slam dunk this, a slam dunk that. But on the flip side, he also had to drop, as you pointed out. He did have a nice one-handed catch late in the game that I thought was good. The knock on him coming out of Arkansas a few years ago, David, was he didn't have elite speed. He didn't high point the football well, not a consistent hands catcher, and he had a case of the easy drops. And the funny thing about that is if you go back and rewatch that game, you get all of that in one preseason game and 41 snaps with Kobe Hamilton. You get his entire kind of pre-draft scouting report, if you will. The question is he, if not for Eli Rogers, is he the number five receiver on this team?
And I think he's ahead of, DeMarcus Ayers, so yes.
So with that said, is he a guy? Now he's not a special teams demon, okay? So that's a strike against him. So yeah, I think I think he has a chance of getting on through to the practice squad, and it would be kind of nice for them to have kind of a bigger receiver that you know, that has practice squad experience and can make you work for your lunch, you know, as a scout team guy. I like him, and a short answer is yeah. I think right now he heads the list as a practice squad candidate.
Yeah. Okay. So, just in terms of other things we saw offensively, you know, I thought Toussaint probably got a little bit better than Darryl Richardson. Man, Darryl Richardson's got a lot of hair. I'm sitting in the press box, and he literally has so much hair I can't see any of the white on the number. I mean, he got more hair than Troy ever had hanging down there. I couldn't see anything on the back of his jersey other than hair at one point on a carry. But 10 carries for 15 yards for him. Fitz's numbers were a little bit better. I think that, you know, they both, I remember a run or two of Fitz where you kind of liked what you saw. Fitz didn't get the carries last week like Richardson did. I thought Richardson impressed last week. Dave, these guys both make the roster for me if Bell is suspended, and if they don't, I guess I give Fitz a little bit of the edge, a bigger back, maybe a little more special teams experience. So Richardson's spot with the Steelers may be contingent on the news on Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I've kind of leaned to Fitz this whole time, to be honest with you. And, you know, the funny thing about it is you go back and listen to what Mike Tomlin said earlier in the week of what he was kind of looking for out of these two running backs. He kind of got it out of both what he was hoping to see, a little bit more splash out of Toussaint and you know, some kind of, you know, special teams improvement out of a guy like Richardson. Now I still think Toussaint's probably the better blocker of the two, especially in pass protection, and I think Fitz Toussaint is also the better option on special teams. So, you know, as long as he doesn't put the football on the ground, you know, moving forward, I still think Fitz has the lead over Darryl Richardson. But as you said, if this Le'Veon Bell appeal winds up not going in the team's favor, then I think obviously you keep both these guys.
Right, and I think I do actually. If I'm gonna bet, that's the way I'd bet. And so we'll see how that plays out. Offensive line, look, clearly now we can make the. We now know that it's Ali Villanueva's job. He's going to be the starting left tackle, barring injury. Ryan Harris is going to be your swing tackle. Gilbert didn't play in this game. Harris was on the right side. Villanueva, I think he only played 10 snaps in game one. Obviously, wasn't pleased with his game one performance. Dave, I honestly, in the press box, it's just hard for me to see a lot of what's going on the offensive line in terms of the overall performance. Thoughts on Villanueva and Harris?
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately, during the preseason, we only had the TV tape to go on. They don't provide us the all 22 looks, and it makes it awfully tough on some plays to know exactly what's going on. But I thought it was a much better performance by Villanueva this time around. As a whole, I thought that the whole starting offensive line did their job and played above the line, if you will. It was good to see Marquise Pouncey back there. Now, Pouncey obviously ducked out of the game a lot sooner than the rest of the other four starters did and was replaced by Dr. Cody Wallace. But in Wallace's play, look, he is what he is. We know what he is, and hopefully this leg or knee injury isn't significant with him. I think the real place to get kind of worried here, David, is that battle between Hubbard and B.J. Finney. And the entire selling point on Hubbard this whole time, the last couple of years, is, boy, the position versatility. He could play all five spots on the offensive line. Well, the problem is he doesn't play any of those five spots on the offensive line well at all. I mean, a jack of
– Well, he certainly doesn't play tackle very well. And that's he is a tackle in name only when he's standing there because and you don't expect him to play tackle. And, you know, Finney had a bit of a rough go as well. I mean, I guess my best bet here is just having talked to Mike Munchak about it, is Hubbard's going to make the team as the ninth, you know, eighth, or however you want to look at Hawkins. You know, those are going to be your two guys, eight and nine, and Finney's going to go to the practice squad. I can't really see that deviating from that plan. I mean, the only thing would be if they, for whatever reason, decide to go with 8 offensive linemen. But I still think Chris Hubbard probably makes this team.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm rooting for B.J. Finney hard, and I wish – here's the thing with him. He didn't play any – I don't think he got to play any center last night, and I was a little bit surprised by that. The only thing I think the reasoning behind that was, as I wrote in my snap count post this morning, is that here we go again. I get to say this name. Valerian Umeizioki didn't play – but that was pretty good. didn't play Thursday night, and I think he was banged up heading into this game, and he can give you some snaps at center, and I think because he didn't play, that kind of and he can play center and guard as well too, talking about Ezeoki, and I think because of that we didn't get to see a guy like Finney, you know, play some at center, and not see a guy like Hubbard play some guard, because obviously they were down a couple of tackles in Marcus Gilbert and Gerald Hawkins. So it's going to be fun to watch this battle play out. And look, if this knee injury winds up being serious with Cody Wallace, well then you got to have Hubbard and B.J. Finney both ultimately make the roster. And they probably still could if you decided to keep an extra number. But obviously, you're probably only going to dress, you know, 7 on
yep. Yeah, history would suggest Hawkins and Hubbard wouldn't dress on game day. I mean, if assuming Wallace is healthy, you've got your swing tackle and Harris, and you've got Wallace who can play the 3 interior spots, and that's the way it's going
to
go.
Yeah, so not a lot to get excited about really so far as those backups on the offensive line go.
All right, Dave, I think, you know, we've covered most of the offense. Let's finish it up with Dustin Vaughn and go full circle on the quarterbacks. I'm going to stick to this, and I'm going to say it with more conviction than I said it last Monday. The Steelers' third quarterback is not on the roster. It's not going to be Bruce Gradkowski. I just think it's a matter of time before he goes on the injured reserve list or is waived injured. And Dustin Vaughn has done nothing to suggest that you would ever consider playing him in an NFL game. He's a big kid with some mobility and a strong arm, but there's a reason he was, you know, the Cowboys and the Bills moved on from him. So I like we were talking about with tight end, that the tight end who's going to be on this team is not on this team yet because he hadn't been cut by somebody else yet. I feel like, you know, you look at the Kansas City Chiefs and all the quarterbacks they have in camp, you look at some other teams, the Steelers don't have their guy yet.
Yeah, and he, you know, look, I know he's playing behind furniture movers, you know, at some point during this game, but some of those throws he's got to be able to make, especially those out throws, and he was wild, you know, give me Vaughn, you know, the wild thing, because and that's been the MO on him, his accuracy since coming out of college in the last 2 preseasons, you know, heading into this year, he played 8 preseason games. Kind of holds on to the football a little bit, you know, afraid, I think, to pull the trigger and go through those progressions as fast as he needs to. Boy, he's been sacked a lot during his preseason career, not just this year, but all 8 preseason games prior to it. I think he's been sacked something like 16 or 17 times, David, during his preseason career. So,
7 times this year with the Steelers in 2 games.
Yeah, what was it, something like 8 or 9 in the previous 8 games? So he's been hit a bunch. And, look, I mean, we are talking about a number 3 here, but if you are going to carry 3 quarterbacks, you know, you would hope to carry a 3rd one that, A, you hope you never see, and, B, eventually has some upside to compete for the number 2 job down the line. I'm not sure Dustin Vaughn is that guy.
Yep, I'm with you. Okay, so let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball. And again, you know, Mike Tomlin's made the decision here to play his defensive starters more for defensive continuity purposes, and the ones look pretty good. Lawrence Timmons with the pass breakup early in the game was a little bit surprisingly on the field on 3rd down and passing situation. We saw Hayward and Tuitt play a fair bit. Shazier into the second quarter again. You know, David, they all played, except, you know, obviously Jones and Dupree, as we've talked about, haven't played. But everybody else got time, and I don't know that anybody stood out as being great, and I don't think anybody stood out as being bad. Just kind of a workmanlike, reasonable performance from the first year.
Yeah, I mean, most of your starters played only 15 snaps, and I thought they represented themselves well. I thought the tackling of that unit particularly was better this time around. I thought Sean Davis looked more comfortable, obviously, than he did during his rookie debut last week against the Lions. So, I mean, it's still early. It wasn't a large slice to evaluate there, but, you know, they got off the field pretty much when they needed to, and you know, I was happy with the starters.
Didn't, you know, the Duran Grant story is a bit interesting, as, you know, he wasn't heavily involved, not nearly as heavily involved as he was last game. And in this one, you know, from what I saw, Dave, I think he played mostly at corner. I don't know how many snaps he played. I just didn't feel like he was quite on the field quite as much as he was in the first game. Any thoughts on his performance?
Yeah, 26 snaps in this game. I can't remember off the top of my head if he saw any work at safety. I don't think he did, David. Off the top of my head, if he did, it wasn't many snaps late in the game there. You know, I haven't focused in on him the first two times through the tape, to be quite honest with you. I've been watching more of the defensive line and the linebackers, so it's hard for me. You know, when we talk again on Monday, I could probably give you a better evaluation of him. But it's not like he stuck out defensively for being awful. I'll put it to you that way.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, I don't know if there are specific guys you want to talk about, Dave. I'll just tell you one thing I got a little bit of a chuckle about was seeing Tyler Matakevich make a play in the second half where he got a tackle for loss. And, you know, Jerry Dulac and I have talked about him on my show, and Jerry's like, you know, he's a smart guy. He's always around the football. He's going to be a really tough guy for the Steelers to cut at the end of camp. And Matt Williamson and I, talking in the post game and during my show, said, you know, Matt's like, you know, this is a guy Steeler fans are going to fall in love with because he's, you know, around the football a lot, obviously a tremendously productive player in college. And, Dave, you know, you got Steven Johnson, who played the most special team snaps again. You got L.J. Fort, who I think has been good in the first two exhibition games. There's no room at the end for Tyler Matakevich unless you're going to carry 11 linebackers. And that's, you know, taking maybe Ross Ventrone's spot as a special teams ace if you think he can be that. But I suggested, you know, when he made the play, nice play by Matakevich. You know, he's practice squad bound. He's not making this 53 unless there's an injury. And I had literally 20 people tweet at me in the next 5 minutes that's insane. He'll never get through waivers. You know, he is absolutely going to be picked up by somebody. He's a future star, a future starter and star. It's just like Josh Morrow, blah, 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 blah. Okay, first
no,
of all.
No, they didn't.
Whatever. right. So, first of all, if everybody in the NFL loves him so much, then he wouldn't have gotten to the seventh round of the NFL draft. That's point one. Point two is Tyler Matakevich hasn't put anything on tape yet. I mean, he made a play. And look, I'm not against Tyler Matakevich. And he is kind of exactly as advertised, a smart player, get to the football, understands what he's doing. But he doesn't have the physical gifts that any of these other guys have. So, you know, he's going to have to, you know, make splash plays. He's going to have to be a demon on special teams to have a chance to sniff at this roster, because he's not, you know, he's not beating out Steven Johnson or L.J. Fort, period. It's just it's not happening. So if the Steelers – I can get the Steelers to 11 linebackers and with only 9 DBs if you want to go that way, because who knows if that 10th DB is – Montrell Garner or Donald Washington, or, you know, there's, you know, somebody else I'm sure I'm forgetting. But the Steelers lack quality depth at defensive back. I don't think Tyler Matakevich is making this team, Dave. And I don't think Zumwalt's making it, and I don't think Feeney's making it.
Yeah, you nailed it. I love me some Dirty Red, but he's not a special player just yet. He'll pass right through waivers. It's not like he's Chidi Iwoma on special teams. LJ Fort's a better all-around player than he is right now. LJ Fort's put together two nice preseason games. And yes, it's only preseason, but LJ Fort knows what the hell's going on for sure, and he can make tackles too. Matakavich, you're running right through waivers. You put him on the practice squad. No questions asked. And if you have an injury somewhere inside and need some special teams help, or somebody comes a call in 6-7 games into the season wanting to snag him off the practice squad, you can probably give him a raise to full salary on the practice squad and keep him, or you just go ahead and promote him as a player that probably not going to dress the rest of the season. Then you take him to camp next year with the hope that maybe he can win a job, and if he doesn't, you move on to another seventh rounder.
Exactly. It's just, you know, look, they're Jerry Olsaski's and Kelvin Beecham's and you know, undrafted free agents Eli Rogers, they exist. Not every guy who's not drafted with a high pedigree is a terrible football player. And in fact, a lot of them are very good football players. But it is an uphill battle, and it's an uphill battle as much as any reason because of the depth the Steelers have at linebacker. If this were 2012 or 13, I'd tell you Tyler Matakevich is probably going to make this roster, but it's not. And the fact that the Steelers went and signed Steven Johnson, and the fact that they got LJ Ford on waivers last year, and he was able to do some things, even with the losses of Sean Spence and Terrence Garvin, there's just not room. I just don't see it. And
let me tell you, LJ Ford can cover the middle of the football field better than I'm talking in coverage here, better than Vince Williams can.
By the way, I'm talking about the seventh round pick. They drafted a linebacker ahead of him. Obviously, they're not playing exactly the same position. But Travis Feeney, he's not going to make the team.
No, either. He needs some sand in his pants, man. Now here's what people are going to tell you with Travis Feeney, David. They're going to say, oh yeah, well Travis Feeney is the same kind of player as Howard Jones is, and look at all the sacks Howard Jones is getting with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers now. So, look, Feeney is a guy that you can get to the practice squad no problem, you know, and try to put some weight on him and try to get him to see the game, you know, standing up, a tad bit more. And go from there. But right now, he's so light on his feet. He has such limited experience in this defense. One special team snap, David. One against the Eagles.
For Feeney.
For Feeney. That's not how you make a football team.
No. That's a bad sign. Okay, Dave, I don't know if there's anybody else you just want to talk about on the defensive side of the ball. Justin Hargrave, McCullers, you know, we saw the starting ends are the starting ends. Ricardo Matthews, not quite as splashy as the first time. Let me ask you, when we're thinking about this roster stuff, if you were taking a guess right now on LT Walton or Keshad Lyons, who you got?
Yeah, I'd have to still lean with LT Walton. Did some nice things, I thought, in that game last week, David, against Detroit. And while I didn't think Lyons played awful in that game, I mean, he forced a fumble and had two tackles. We only, I think, all but three or four snaps of his, David, talking about Lyons, was in the nickel at, you know, as a defensive tackle. So yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more of him in a 3-4 base as an end, and it'll be interesting to go back through this thing and chart it and see exactly, because LT Walton did not play against the Eagles because of the back tightness. So Lyons was a guy, the defensive player that I highlighted yesterday prior to the game, saying that this is a guy to watch, big opportunity with possibly Walton sitting out. And to me, he didn't stick out the first couple of times through here. LT Walton, I think, is further along in the development, and I think Lyons is a guy that you can pass through waivers again, get to the practice squad, and he can be your seventh, you know, your seventh defensive end that's got some experience, that if injuries strike, you can get up to the 53-man roster. So I would right now, still, even injury aside, I would have Walton ahead of Lyons on a depth chart.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think Rashad Lyons is a guy headed to the practice squad as well. Dave, a crazy story, and one that, you know, I've never heard the story before. It doesn't shock me that it happens, but in the run-up to the game, the Eagles warming up, one of their punters punted a ball to the other end of the field. And Caleb Sturgis, their kicker, you know, the guy who kicked for him 13 games last year, was there, and ball hit him in the head. And I'm sure the initial reaction of everybody is to kind of chuckle about it. When I heard it, I was like, wow, it hit him in the head. He's not going to play in the game because of concussion. Man, I can't believe a ball hit him in the head and his helmet, and just the impact must have been on. He didn't have his helmet on, and it came down. And I know somebody who saw it and said it came down kind of point down, and those balls are pretty hard. And, you know, you can imagine a guy kicking it up in the air. You get that velocity. It comes back down with the same velocity at that point where it gets him. And he was staggered, went down on one knee, and was down for a period of time. And Jordan Berry was asked after the game if that's ever happened. He said, you know, through his career, it's happened, you know, 8 or 10 times, he would guess, where there's so many people around the field, they're not paying attention. I cannot believe, Dave, the guys, particularly kickers, are out there without their helmet and not aware, because you would think of all people, kickers are constantly kind of looking up and making sure they know what's going on. Just a really odd injury that impacted the start of that game.
And I know you don't want a lot of kids running around out there. I'm talking kids, meaning teenagers or whatnot. But can't you get one of those kids that ball boys or whatnot to run around there and make sure they keep a heads up on that kind of thing, or no? I mean, is there too many people out there on the field? I guess, you know, when you got 90 players, I'm trying.
You know, I think this was early. Like I said, I didn't see it. I don't know exactly when this happened, but I think this might have been early when it's just those guys out there. But I hate to speculate, because the punters generally are not doing that when the whole team is out there. They're trying to get out there early or late and do that when the field's relatively empty, just because of that whole, you know, possible scenario.
Well, if that was indeed the case and it was that much earlier, definitely send one of those punter assistants out there, if you will. That's why they call them ball boys, right?
Right, exactly.
That's strange. And evidently Tom Brady was running with scissors or something last night.
Edward Scissor Brady.
Early morning hijinks.
So that was the and Jordan Berry, another good effort from him. That, you know, as we said last week, there's not a punting competition anymore. Berry, the hang time on that second punt, I think, was 5.1 seconds or something, and it was somebody suggested it was a longer hang time than any punt he had last year. Now, again, warm weather, preseason, all that impact stuff, but you got to perform when you're asked to perform, and so far so good for him.
Yeah, that one, that fight's over. Stop the fight. Does Monday make it to Friday?
Yeah, Monday makes it to 75, but I don't, you know, that's – so when is 75? Is that after the next game?
Yeah, that's after the third game. Look, I mean, you're not going to have Cody Wallace. You got some people banged up. You need an offensive lineman. Go ahead and ship Monday out. And
that could happen. You might have to get another offensive lineman depending on where everybody is.
I mean, you know, he's not going to beat out Berry at this point. So you need the roster spot. They already got rid of the backup long snapper. Now it's time to get rid of the backup punter, because you need that roster spot. Well, David, when did the 90-man roster become?
I think it was about 3 years ago.
What I'm saying is, when did it become that it looks like it's not enough?
Yeah, necessary. I mean, we lived with 80 just fine, and with no issues ever, and all of a sudden you feel like you can't get it done with 90.
Yeah, now it looks and feels like you need 100, right?
Yeah, I mean, nobody wants to play their best 20 guys, so, you know, that part of the rule changed, and that's impacted on the back end of the roster.
Yep. Anything else to wrap up on this game before we shoot on before we shoot to the James Harrison stuff real quick to close things out?
No, we think we got a ton in there, and we'll, you know, have a little bit more to say about it on Monday.
All right, what's your thoughts on James Harris? I don't think either one of us are surprised he finally agreed to do the interview with the league. But look, he likes playing with fire, calling Roger Goodell a crook last night. It's going to be interesting if see if he if he loses any money there. But overall, not surprised with his decision, right?
None. You know, and I think this is a little bit on the Players Association. I understand the principled stance that they took, not wanting to have their players bullied by the league or be subject to any particular allegation that may be made. They don't want them called on the carpet for anything that somebody might say. So in that sense, I get it. As John Clayton said on my show this week, look, the Steelers could probably survive without James Harrison. If the Packers lose Julius Peppers and Clay Matthews, their defense is in shambles and their chance to win the Super Bowl goes away. So this is a huge deal. And, you know, Neil may sue the league. He's going to retire. So he's kind of the holdout in this situation. But I understand exactly where everybody was coming from the whole way. And I don't know what more to say about it. You know, I think it's fine that Harrison said past the deadline because the Steelers have a game on this coming Friday. So he's going to be in New Orleans. And so they meet Tuesday and we'll see how it goes. And he was defiant again last night after the game when he spoke to the media and just said, I got nothing to hide. I got nothing to they can tape the interview if you want to show it publicly. I'm all for it. Doesn't matter to me. And then, you know, a Steeler fan's question might be, well, why didn't you just do this, you know, a month ago and make it not a distraction? I don't think it's a distraction. I think it was a stand on principle. But, yes, I'm glad to see that, you know, cooler heads have prevailed here and everything's going to get resolved.
You think they'll still try to maybe suspend him or want him to do it before the 25th deadline? Or do you think they'll say, okay, James, you can do it on the 29th or 30th or, you know, whatever people.
Yeah, there's absolutely no reason for the NFL at this point to dig in their heels on a date. So no, I don't think that'll be an issue.
We could go another podcast here talking about whether or not the league is in their right to do this, but the Players Association has obviously come out and said we'll support these guys, whatever decision they make, yada yada. Pardon me, David. I got to be honest with you. Part of me was hoping that James Harrison would stick his heels in the ground to force their hand here, but he obviously didn't. I think we could have seen an injunction here that maybe would have lasted the whole season. But rest assured, James Harrison has planted the flag in the ground firmly over the course of the last few years with his thoughts on the extreme power that the commissioner has and all like that. It's time for somebody else or a group of people to really start running with this moving forward. And by the time the next CBA rolls around, I just think it's unfair based on the nature of how this report surfaced and all like this. I think these players are getting the shaft, and the fact that a guy like Peyton Manning has already talked to the league and been exonerated, I don't see how there's anything there. And to me, this is just the league putting on a dog and pony show, claiming to do due diligence here to look better in the eyes of some fans and media, in my opinion. I just think this whole thing's a shaft. James Harrison's been randomly drug tested several times. He posts his videos on what he does during the off season. It's ludicrous, if you ask me.
I understand where certainly that sentiment comes from, and I can't argue with it, Dave. It's a difficult situation. I understand why the league wants to have these conversations. I don't think necessarily that even though the guy recanted his testimony that there's nothing there. I mean, he's the one who broke the story about the package being sent to Manning's house. So, you know, the cynical person would suggest maybe somebody got to that guy and said, you better recant this, you know, for coming from whatever angle. This is really bad. So who knows? And I'm glad they're going to get it out of the way. And I don't expect anything to come of it. and just kind of move on from there.
Yeah, and this all gets sewn up here, you know, shortly after the third preseason game. So, anything else topical news wise? I know people have asked me quite a bit on Twitter. What's up with Le'Veon Bell? I thought his appeal was supposed to be heard on the 18th, but you know, like he told the media earlier this week, he still hasn't heard about an appeal date yet. So. Evidently, that report by Alex Marvez was off base because the 18th has come and gone. Now, will something happen this week? You would think they would find out the status of Le'Veon Bell for the 2016 here fairly soon. So maybe something happens on that front. But, Dave, we'll talk more about the game and other comings and goings on Monday. This has been a fun early Friday morning podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, yell at us and call us Landry Jones apologist and what have you at theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You can also donate to the show by going to SteelersDepot.com and finding that donate button in the black navigational bar. David, happy Friday. Go find that car. Dude, where's your car?
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.